Welcome to Farming for Nature with me, Bridget Barry, where farmers across Ireland who have found a way to work with nature while saving money tell us how they have done it. By increasing the dung beetle population on his farm, Bruce Thompson, a dairy farmer from County Laois, has seen benefits to his livestock, his soil, his wildlife, and to his back pocket. Today we hear the story of exactly when Bruce first got interested in this creature, and how it has made a big difference to the way he farms his land since. Hi, Bruce. We're here today to talk about dung beetles, but before we get stuck in, can you just tell us about your farm and your farming system?
Hi, Bridget. Thanks very much for having me here. I'm a dairy farm. We're operating a spring calving system, which means our cows calve mainly in February and March. They're housed for the winter, and they calve and they go out to grass. The grass is the main part of their diet, which is where they produce the milk from. And then in the wintertime, then they come back in for the winter. We are calving approximately 300 cows. We keep all the young stock on the farm, which means that our replacement animals are also reared on the farm. And these calve down approximately 2 years of age. So we have to rear these young animals up to that point.
Brilliant. And tell me, the dung beetle, we're here to talk about it. What is it and what makes it so special?
Well, we have about 50 species, a bit less than 50 species in Ireland of dung beetles. They live on and live, some of them live in the dung pats that these cows of mine produce. And they recycle these dung pats. So basically they're turning a waste product into a nutrient for the grass to grow. So these dung pats are full of nutrients such as nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium. But these products are no good to the grassland sitting up on top of the soil. So the dung beetles, they recycle these dung pats by drying them out and burying them into the soil. We have the dwellers and we have the tunnelers. The dwellers, they live and breed in the dung pat. So on top of the ground or just underneath the dung pat is where they live. And then the tunnelers, they actually get the dung and bury it into the soil at the roots of the grass. Now, of course, that sounds more spectacular, that they're pulling down the dung into the soil. But the dwellers, what happens there is they actually drink the juices out of the dung pat. So the dung pat's mainly liquid, although it looks like a solid lump. It's actually a delicious pie, if you want to call it that the dung beetles drink the juices out of. That leaves it in a position that the earthworms become attracted to it, and they actually pull it into the soil then. So it ends up in the soil by the action that these dung beetles create. When it's in the soil, then it's at the roots of the grasses and herbs that are growing on our pasture. So these dung beetles are assisting us then in nutrient recycling. That's the main run of it. These beetles then are a food source then for other species because they're bottom of the food chain. So your birds, bats, badgers and foxes, they prey on these dung beetles. And not just the solid state dung beetles, but the infant ones, the pupae and larvae, they feed on these. By, if you ever see a dung pat pulled open by some other creature, they're probably after either earthworms or the dung beetle larvae. They're basically turning a waste product into an ecological masterpiece.
Brilliant. So they're all part of the ecosystem. I love that term, dwellers and tunnelers. That kind of reminds me of something I used to watch when I was little, called Fraggle Rock or something. You know,
they'd be... I remember that program. Yeah.
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 Love that. Yeah. Yeah. So tell me how...
I'm holding myself off from singing the theme tune here now.
So could I ask, going back in time, how did you get interested in dung beetles?
First one I saw, so I said we have two groups of them here in Ireland, with tunnelers and dwellers. Well, there's a third group that we don't have in Ireland, which is the roller. And that would be the one, if you ever watched David Attenborough out on the African savannah with the dung beetle poo being rolled around by these big dung beetles.
That's right, they're pushing them around, yeah.
Pushing them around. That was the first dung beetle I ever saw. I actually have a photo of it. I was so intrigued by it. And I thought this was a complete alien species to what we would have in Ireland. I was on a safari in South Africa and I saw this creature rolling this basically a tennis ball out in front of us. And yeah, took loads of photographs of it. And I just thought, wouldn't it be fantastic?
Everyone else is looking at the big five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here with me on my hands and knees. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at this. Yeah. What are you looking at? So I just thought that wouldn't it be fantastic if we had these dung beetles in Ireland and to bury the dung pats into the soil. Fast forward a number of years then, I had taken an interest in animal medicines and the use, particularly antimentics. Now, antimentics they're the worming products that we use in our cows. An animal has worms, we give it an antimentic. But the problem is we have only three products we can use on our cows. And Chagas, they have found that there's resistance to all three of these products in every single trial they've done. And some of the trials have seen complete resistance on farms. So which means these products do not work on the worms, the intended worms. We noticed on our farm that we seem to be using more and more of these. I was looking at how we could mitigate exposure to these parasites out on the pasture. I came across a fantastic character over in the UK called Sally Ann Spence. And I was saying how we were starting to use less wormers on our farm by using more of a diagnostic approach. And she was telling me about these dung beetles. She said that I had them on my farm, and I didn't really believe her. As the case with most farmers I come across, none of them have actually looked. Going out onto the farm that evening, I kicked open a few dung pats, and lo and behold, here was these dung beetles under and in my dung pats. Now, these dung beetles actually contribute to the reduction in our worms by drying out the dung pats and getting rid of them quickly. But the problem is these antimentics that I'm talking about actually have a negative effect on the populations. So in using wormers, we're actually leaving a sterile environment for these parasites, these worms to breed and migrate out onto pasture and leave increasing our exposure then to these parasites down the line.
So have you felt that cycle? You've decreased your anti-wormers. You're increasing your dung beetles. Did you feel as a farmer it was quite a risk to do that?
Yeah, I may be going against medical advice to an extent as well. From a vet's point of view, to give advice for someone not to use an animal medicine is very difficult to do because you need to have eyes on the ground with these animals the whole time. And if an animal gets sick, it's the liability rests with them. So the easiest thing to do is to tell them to use a wormer if they're concerned at all. And I get that. The risk end of it, there's scientific ways we can manage and measure what the risk is. So we have weighing scales is one thing. So if an animal's performing well, we know it's not being hampered in production, because one of the first things an animal does when ingests parasites is that it excretes this enzyme in the lining of its stomach that raises its pH and reduces its intake, their appetite and their intake. So this first reaction is to start losing weight. But also we have labs around the country. We can send off feces to get them tested to see how many or what count of parasites might be in those animals. We can test blood, we can test milk, and there's also mobile kits now that farmers and vets can own themselves, and they can test in-house or in the field to see what level of parasites are in each animal. So that, as well as actually picking out individual animals within a herd. So if you think your animals need to be wormed, well, that might be the case, but maybe not all of them. Just pick some and worm some of those. Look, there is an element of risk, but it's more calculated maybe than it would have been when these wormers were introduced. As these products are becoming more, there's more resistance becoming to these products, we're going to have to start looking at more complicated result or means of combating these
Alternatives.
parasites.
How has that impacted your farming system?
Yeah, we're looking at in our young stock in particular, there's certain genetics of animals and bloodlines that are more resistant. We're looking at moving out animals and not breeding off of animals that are more susceptible, because not only are they more susceptible, but they're also spreading around and harbouring these parasites more. So they're putting stress on the whole herd. In terms of grassland, it is often noted on our farm that we've very few dung pats. Old dung pats on the farm, which is indicative of the number of dung beetles, is a complete ecosystem of its own. There's loads of different insects in it, but the dung beetle is probably the most spectacular. So any insect that is in there is helping the breakdown of it and contributing to recycling and ecology. But the more insects that are in it, the quicker it's going to get broken down. So there's less dung pats on our grassland. As well as that, those dung pats then are also a breeding ground for nuisance flies. So we have noted that there's less of those on our farm over the last number of years through increasing dung beetles. So it is a big help in terms of managing biting flies on stock. That was one of the reasons I went down to Australia to study dung beetles. The dung beetles were introduced into Australia to combat bushfly, which became a big problem down there in the mid 20th century. So I went down to see how they brought in and mass reared dung beetles. So that was very interesting. So I tried my hand at breeding dung beetles here myself on my own farm to increase the populations on them. Where other farmers are breeding herbivores, I'm breeding
Which
dung
I
beetles.
was actually going to ask that. I mean, if a, does can a farmer buy dung beetles, or do they just turn up if you've got the right kind of equation of what's in place?
So I thought that would have been a very simple answer. It's one I get asked quite a bit, but it's complicated. So can you buy them? There's no one actually selling them in Ireland, as far as I'm aware. I think I would have come across them by now. but down in the southern hemisphere, yes, you can buy them. Do you need to is the question, and why do you need to is the other one. So, just say, for example, if you had a polluted river and there was no fish in it, buying fish to put them into it's not going to is not going to put a population of fish into the river. So the first thing you have to do is figure out why you don't have dung beetles. So if you're using a lot of wormers, then no matter what you do, you're just not going to have a good healthy population of dung beetles. So that's the first thing to address. The other thing then is the type of pasture. Now I will hold my hands up and admit that part of an intensive type of system. So our grassland would be quite soft, which doesn't, generally speaking, bode well with dung beetles. They're rather more herbal-lay type of dung paths, which we've moved more towards in the last number of years. The stiffer dung paths out of animals is what they prefer. So that's another point to look at. Another one is the environment locally. If you're one farmer with small farmers surrounded by farmers that are prophylactically using wormers, then no matter what you do, you're going to struggle to get good healthy dung beetles. And it doesn't mean you won't have them, but you're going to struggle because they fly. I met with an ecologist down in Tasmania who introduced dung beetles into parts of Tasmania. They actually marked some of the dung beetles and found them 70 kilometers away. So they do move. They will go over hedges. Now there's some the smaller ones in particular don't go quite so far, but the bigger ones tend to migrate pretty well around. So they're the kind of maybe caveats to increasing the populations. Now look, I've done on my own farm increasing the populations of them through breeding. It does take quite a bit of work and management to do it. There's a few processes you have to go through, and I've tried out in the field with tents breeding them outdoors, and I was involved with the RSPB and the Isle of Islay. The chough bird up on the Isle of Islay is in decline to the use of triclobendazole and synthetic pyrethroids, which are fluke and fly treatment products being used in sheep, which has reduced the number of dung beetles which the chough bird feeds on as fledglings. With the RSPB, we built these tents and caught beetles, dung beetles, and bred them to release them out onto pasture. Our reproductive rate was, I think it was 19.8 to 1. So it means if we caught one beetle, we'd get 20 basically back out of it for every one beetle we caught. So yeah, they were re-released. The other way I've tried breeding them is in incubators in the farm, which is more artificial. Now that's seriously laborious, and you want to be well committed to it. But it worked okay for me, but I didn't get a high reproductive rate. So out in the field seems to be the best way to do it.
Tell me, Bruce, like your interest in dung beetles, has that influenced the way you view your whole farm as an ecosystem and the biodiversity of your farm?
Yeah, it has. From it, I can see that decisions that I'm making in terms of products I'm using on my farm and grazing management, these decisions that I'm making have an effect on the environment around me. So as I stated with the ecological input of these dung beetles, if I was doing practices on my farm that reduce these populations, I know now that these have a knock-on effect. So these are the questions that I start asking about other products that I'm using and other practices that I'm doing on my farm. Yeah, look, you start getting down on your hands and knees and looking through grassland. You start looking in hedgerows. You start thinking about things quite differently. Like before, I would never have batted an eyelid maybe at the likes of coal tits flying across the land. But now, maybe 3 days after grazing a field in the summertime, I see them swooping in and swooping down low and up high and down low. I know now that these guys are after insects that are attracted to the dung from my animals. So then you start thinking about a bit more about the hedgerows, and then you'll start looking at other insects. So we've started planting trees. Well, not started. We would have done a bit of it, but you kind of appreciate more these habitats have for nature. So yeah, tree planting, different hedgerow management, grassland management has changed. We haven't sown a monoculture now in, oh, I think it must be 6 or 7 years, whereas before it would have been all perennial ryegrasses. And we have one pond gone in and a second one in his planning, thanks to Farming for Nature. And we're putting up bird boxes, and I'm working with my neighbor here as well, trying to catch vermin to feed owls. Yeah, so it's, yeah,
It's kind of having a snowball effect. So it is a rolling dung beetle in a different manner, in the fact that it's kind of causing you to kind of roll into these other
yeah,
areas.
that's right. Yeah, literally the snowball effect, only it's not snow.
Dare I ask a dairy farmer this, but has your work with dung beetles influenced or helped your overall farm finances? Like, do you do less chemical inputs, or is there improved health, animal health, milk quotas?
Yeah, well, look, I often liken the management of these to the management of cell count in dairy cows, because selective dry cow treatment. So that means, as we're drying off cows, we have to pick out animals that need antibiotics for a cell count. So there's been a big push in Ireland in terms of a reduction of antibiotics, because there's a human price tag with the One Health initiative. So as farmers started looking at what animals needed these antibiotics, they started focusing more on where the problems actually are. And there was a big fear when they decided to start using less antibiotics that the cell count was going to start rising, there was going to be more mastitis. But the effect was actually the opposite, because the focus is now on the problem ones. So you might be using more products on a particular animal, but overall you're using less of them. So yes, to answer your question quickly, as I'm now focusing on what animals are infected, or when animals need to be wormed more so, I'm focusing where the products actually will benefit the animal, rather than just using the product as a management tool. So like I said earlier, it is more complicated, but the outputs of it are far greater. You're now looking at animals that are more resilient and fit the system better. Whereas for three generations, we've been maybe hiding animals in our herds, or bloodlines in our herds that weren't really suitable for the system that we have.
So, have you any last recommendations and suggestions for farmers who want to investigate dung beetles more?
Look, talk to your vet. Tell them you want to reduce your animal inputs, in terms of antimicrobials and fly control products. Get out onto your pasture, pick up a dung pat and drop it into a bucket of water and see what floats out of it. And you might be surprised. And yeah, I suppose just think of what these little creatures then have to contribute to the ecology.
Bruce, I'm not going to lie, I rarely speak to someone who's so passionate about poop and what lives in it. But it's really in interesting indicator for farmers on the health of their land, their animals, and all that's tied into it. Bruce Thompson, thanks very much for being my guest today.
Thanks, Bridget.
That's it. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and share with your friends. If you would like to get in contact with me, Bridget Barry, then email info@farmingfornature.ie. This podcast series is supported by National Parks and Wildlife Service and the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Until next time, goodbye.